Rolling.
I came here on a golden rocket.
You never listen to me.
Leaving on a magic carpet and now.
Divorce sucks.
It's what you do this time.
We don't like each other.
He doesn't like me. I like him.
I'm Serge.
I'm Monica.
We were married for almost 9 years. We're divorced now.
We live four doors down from each other.
We have three kids.
You're not being very nice to me.
This is our story of divorce and life after divorce. Our ex-life.
Our ex-life.
I want a drink.
You want a drink? I want a drink, too.
Here we are, our ex-life. I'm Serge Blanco.
I'm Monica.
Should I let you go first?
You already went first. It's too late now. This is just like our marriage, dude.
Mm-hmm. Monica used to tell me all the time that I would not hold doors open for her.
Oh, my God. We would like, say we're going to Best Buy or something. He would park the car. We would get out. And he would be halfway into the building before I'm, like, coming around the car to start walking in.
And that's the kind of stuff that you end up after a divorce, like, thinking, well, was that one of the reasons that we didn't work out?
Yes, Serge. Yes, it was.
But really, it's not, because the reasons are much deeper. It's like you're looking at a small flag planted in your yard, or like one of those yard flamingos.
But
like, there's a yard flamingo, but really, we're talking about the core center of the earth.
But is it really?
The fire that burns within. What happened to the fire?
Let me so politely interject here and say that maybe not. Maybe the reason for divorce wasn't some deep core thing, but it was a million never waiting for me to go in the buildings or other little things that are similar to that, that all added up to
the core blowing up.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense, I guess. I mean, none of it makes sense. This is our ex-life. Monica and I are divorced.
3 years now?
3 years. So we've been divorced about a third of the time that we were married. We were married for about 9 years. We've got three little kids, ages 2, 6, and 8.
Actually, our youngest is 3.
That's right. I have a kid with someone else that you don't know about.
Oh, my God. Charlie is 3.
God, I certainly would not pick another toddler if I was going to have another kid.
Henry is 6, and Violet is 8.
Right. And we're just going to go for this, man. We're excited to try and talk about...
people need to hear our voices, Serge.
I think people are hungry for some fucking truth in this world about love, marriage, fidelity, infidelity, monogamy, in monogamy.
In monogamy?
About just all of it, you know, all this stuff that we've gone through for the past, you know, 12 or 13 years. Not that ours is any special case. It's just that we probably are a little bit more, what's that word when you like to look at yourself in the mirror?
Narcissistic.
Yes. And so we're going to do this narcissistic podcast about divorce.
No, it is not narcissistic. I mean, I don't know. A podcast about yourself is inherently narcissistic, I suppose. But I guess I...
Life is narcissistic is what I'm finding out.
Anymore it is. I guess my goal with this is to share truths. I guess in a world filled with social media where things are presented to you in a particular way that is very flattering, perhaps, I want some dirty truths, but not like horrible, dysfunctional, oversharing, but we probably tend to do that.
And some of that's good, I think. You know, and there's always going to be people that don't like what you do, no matter what it is.
But I do find that...
You know, having written about parenting for a long time, I find a lot of that has become very twee and ridiculous and stupid. You know, there's not a lot of literary minds mixed up in that anymore, from the editors to the writers. You know, when you and I first started doing that, and you started before me, people were writing some raw stuff
really
about
cool
parenting,
thing. Yep.
You know.
And it got weird.
Yeah, it went away. And so I think the same thing is kind of to be said about divorce. And divorce, of all topics, comes with this slant of animosity a lot of times, you know? You think I'm wrong?
No, I think...
It's a word that just kind of makes people's blood curdle a little bit, like divorce. You know, it's certainly not, doesn't make you feel as warm as love or marriage. It doesn't make you feel as horny as sex.
No, divorce is considered a failure, generally, the failure of a marriage. So divorce is a failure, and you immediately think of animosity. You certainly don't think of two people hosting a podcast together
right.
after divorce.
But maybe me and you were born to be divorced.
Aw, you're my divorce soulmate.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Maybe that we would just create this whole new thing where people can come to terms with the fact that, you know, divorce as horrific as it can be and often is, and I would say that ours was, especially for me.
Let me interject here. That's okay. The perfect time for me to say that I was the one that ultimately wanted the divorce, and Serge did not. And so I have ever since then been painted as the villain, and Serge is the heartbroken victim. Mm-hmm. And I just find that so offensive that anybody...
And I've never felt comfortable with that.
Oh, please.
No, I never have.
And you...
Hey, you know, the thing about all of this is, and again, with two sides to every tale...
You revel in the heartbroken victim.
What kind of chips can I cash in there? Tell me that.
The ladies dig a heartbroken dude.
So what? You've seen pictures of me with a tear rolling down my eye? I've written about our divorce, but I've never slagged you off.
You have been lovely about me. My only point was...
I experienced heartbreak that was genuine.
You had genuine heartbreak.
And as a writer, I felt like you wrote about it.
And whether that was your doing or not, you were
my earliest articles had a hashtag that said Monica sucks. And I took that out of it.
You're so bullshit. No, all I'm saying is I call them... You write about being heartbroken and... I call them the casserole bringers, and those are the women that crawl out of the woodwork to help you mend your broken heart.
Well, I got news for you. That ain't my audience, girl.
I'm a
rock and roller. Y'all ain't got no casserole bringers.
Your Facebook feed is filled with casserole bringers.
Whatever.
That's right.
You're from Utah. Everybody has casserole bringing out there.
My only point is, to bring it back to what my original point was, is just because you're the one that finally folded your cards, or you're the one that admitted defeat in marriage, it doesn't mean you're the villain. Nobody wants a divorce.
Sure.
I didn't want a divorce.
And I recognize that.
It seemed like my ultimate only alternative.
Right.
No. So.
And I think, again, we can get into that, and we will. You know, a lot of this is a self-exploration. I imagine for you, it certainly is for me.
Yes.
You know, I often think of any artistic endeavor that you throw yourself at, it should be something that you're also going to take a lot from, you know, quite possibly more than anybody that ever listens or reads or watches what you do, you know? There's a whole world of art that exists behind the art itself. And as meta as that may sound...
That is a beautiful concept, though, because that, like, the world of art that exists behind the actual art itself.
Right. And so if you and I can create some kind of artistic thing out of... all the bullshit and pain and suffering.
The ashes
and
of marriage.
Yeah, you know, that we've gone through. And also the galaxies of joy and happiness that did and, in fact, do continue to exist for us as parents, you know. All of that combined. Oh, my God, it's a podcast that could go on for the next 10 million years if you do it right.
Well, let us tell folks that we, from the ashes of our marriage, we tried to escape each other and moved 30 minutes apart in two separate towns. And then last year, I told Serge I was moving to his small town to end the ridiculous commute and the horrible custody exchanges that were taking hours out of our lives. So now I live four doors down from Serge in this tiny little town in central Pennsylvania. I can see he parks his car in a parking lot that I can see from my bedroom window, which has been really awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's awkward, isn't it?
It is, yes.
It's just kind of awkward because And I think awkward is the right word to describe it. And because it's not awful, right?
It's awful, Serge. It's not awful for you. It's weird because I think for a while, like the first year after divorce, I was okay. I think I was running on adrenaline or something, and you were a mess. And I think this year, you have really handled your shit, and I've been kind of a shit show. And so, yeah, it's horrible for me. It's not great.
I don't handle my shit.
It is not great to see a woman leave your house after a date or an overnight or whatever you have going on. It's awkward and horrible. And
But that was the one thing I said to you when you moved here. I'm like, you're going to move where you literally watch me park my car.
But that's the point. And that's full circle the point of... I want to, despite all of that horrible shit, I want to live near you because we have these three beautiful children that deserve a really fluid, they can see mom or they can see dad whenever they want. And Right. It's beautiful. It's beautiful and awful and horrible. But the ease for our children far outweighs witnessing the walks of shame from your home on Saturday mornings.
Dude, you're hitting a major home run here because you're touching on something that I often hear people say. And a lot of people that talk about divorce and even people that have commented on some of my writing and I'm sure on some of your writing about divorce and co-parenting and raising kids is that, you know, you got to put the kids first, you know, put the kids first. And the truth of the matter is...
People say it, but they don't do it.
That is it's bullshit because you try and put the kids first and we do. We put the kids first. For 5 minutes, and then the real stuff comes back, right? Your feelings of, and that this is the human experience is this constant gauntlet, these constant powerful orbs that shoot out of the sky into your face and your heart and your ass about, you know, greed, lust, envy. Revenge, all these things,
jealousy,
just. Pure bitterness, right? Which a lot of divorces, no matter how much you put the kids first, are poisoned and toxified. Is that a word?
You just made it a word.
Toxified by that kind of stuff. And
that's basically the point of what we're doing here with our ex-life is all that stuff happens and you have to keep climbing upward and climbing out of it and moving forward if you have children, because what else are you going to do? So we live four doors down from each other. What's the upside for you of that? The downside is the really awkward moments and the awfulness. And so what's the upside for you?
Well, you know, obviously, for the kids, you know, I do think there's a massive, massive
advantage. But it's not just for the kids.
No.
Think about it. If you miss your...
I know.
One of the most horrible things about divorce is learning to live without your kids half the time.
Right.
But even when you don't have the kids, they're right there. You can hear them playing in my backyard.
Right.
And that's a really beautiful thing for a divorced parent to have, is the children there always, even when they're not.
Yeah.
It's the next best thing, is it not?
It is. It's absolutely... a wonderful part of my life, having them here so close, you being able to drop them off in the morning and I can put them on the bus. I mean, that is a convenience that you probably couldn't pay for in a lot of divorces.
Does that outweigh the horror of your ex-wife living four doors down from you?
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder. You know, sometimes I wonder because I was surviving in that other role. It sucked. It used a lot of gas, but I was surviving in it. And when I came back and walked in my back door and walked in my summer kitchen and jangled my keys down into my ashtray, I felt like I was alone in this place. I felt like I had a lot of space.
Even when you're here now and you're alone, do you just feel my presence down there?
Sometimes. Sometimes. But I think, like any story that's unfolding beneath your feet, I can't really judge how I seriously feel about it. And I certainly don't know how it's going to end. You know, are we always going to live a few doors down? It's hard to imagine that we would, you know. Yet at the same time...
At the same time, I can't picture not having...
If you moved away or I moved away right now, I think it would be painful in a way, you know?
Yeah.
And mostly regarding the kids, but then also I think you really enjoy looking out your kitchen window and spying on me when I get in my car and stuff, so that would be painful for you.
Well, okay, there you go.
All right, I hope people can join us... as many times as we can make this podcast. We plan on doing one. We could probably do one every day, but...
You could do a podcast every day. You like to hear yourself talk.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to this right now, actually. We got to go. I have to listen to this.
Did you know I used to live with Dad in the same house?
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Yeah.
When you were born, I lived with Dad in the same house.
But was our baby?
You were a baby. And then Dad moved to his house and I moved to this house.
Monica sits on my coffee table in her work clothes, talking fast. Jive talk, I tell myself. There is no way. When she gets going about a thing, she gets going about it. And here today, at 3 p.m, the kids fresh off the bus, stomping around my front room, yanking toys off the shelves, tossing them on the floor for fun, I get torn. I get torn between clocking what my ex-wife is trying to run by me and hollering at Violet and Henry to put the shit back on the shelves. This is my day without kids. They're only here for a few minutes and then they'll be gone, out the back door, into the minivan, strapped in and riding away on the beeline run down the valley to the west. Back to where their mom's is. Their house, their other house, I'm never sure what to call it. Part of me struggles to concentrate on Monica's words, but the other part of me, the part that wins a lot of these battles to focus that I fight every 10 minutes or so, that part of me is obsessively consumed with preventing a messy room breaking out on one of my days off. Isn't that weird? Isn't that kind of sad that I've become that guy? I know it is, but whatever. I live in two very different grooves now. Either the kids are with me or they're not with me. And I can't seem to control much up in my mind either time. So I try and keep a tidy house, I guess. That's how crazy people or sad people or people lost in life, that's how they try and give themselves the feeling that they have some sort of control over the constant spin out of living. We overexercise to control our bodies. We wash the dishes as soon as the last bit of mac and cheese has been eaten so we can control the sink. We pick up the toys even as the kids are playing with them, put them back on the shelf, walk away, and are overcome by bolts of shame. I turn around and put the damn plastic Iron Man back on the floor in a desperate attempt to shake off true mania. I'm just tired of running back and forth, Monica is saying. Her blue eyes get that shine they get when she's on an excited jag, and I dart mine away like I do all the time anymore. Think about how much easier our lives would be if only we had to drive 2 or 3 minutes to drop the kids off. Think about how nice it would be if Henry misses you and says, I want to go see Dad and have a snack with him, and we can make it happen just like that. I look at the kids and sip my coffee. I'm over-caffeinated and slightly dehydrated because all I ever seem to drink is coffee anymore. I'm shaky and jittery and put the fucking toys back, and I love you guys so much, and I need to figure out this money thing for this week because I need to pay my electric and get groceries, and I'm tired of all this. Deep in my heart, I am listening to Monica, but up here on the crust of the earth, I'm trying my hardest not to, because she's telling me she wants to move here, to my town, to make it easier for us as parents, to make it better for the kids in almost every single way, to be able to see each other at a moment's notice. To be near one another in all the right ways. Together again. But without the sex or the shared bank accounts or dinner with everyone in the same room. I stand there rambling things to myself like I'm rambling these words out right now. Scattershot. No aim, no steady breath, no control. I want to lash out and tell her no. I want to get to the bottom of all this, to understand the real reason she would dare to even dream this shit up. She hates my town. It's rural and small and isolated. She lives close to supermarkets and malls and bookstores and Thai food and her job. So why all of a sudden would she want to come here? For the kids? Is it really for the kids? My suspicions are gushing through my brain, and I want to yell at the mess makers 10 feet away, and I want to turn this whole conversation into something entirely different. Can't we just have one of our million little arguments? Can't you just give me grief about women I'm messing around with? Can't we just walk away from all of this and let me go back to having no control over my life because that's what I tell myself, and so that's who I am? The short answer is no, we can't. I already know that. She's made up her mind. She's coming here, and it really doesn't matter what the reasons are. and that makes me so upset that I can't even go along with it or bash it down with fiery objection. I just stand there listening to her tell me something I have never even considered a remote possibility. And I'm hurt, scared, sad, exhilarated, uncertain, pissed off. I've tried my hardest to let go of Monica when I never wanted to let go at all. Now here she comes again, circling the town, coasting slow and easy above me in the sky. Big old sexy bird of prey, mother of my kids, mother of her kids, mother of our kids, swooping around in vulturish loops over my house, over me standing there in my living room in my little rented house on my little quiet street, living my little uncontrollable life. Here she comes again, the spark shooting off her deep blues, and I wish I was the coffee table under her, holding her ass, losing control back when it was okay. These things, this divorce crap, it isn't ever what it's supposed to be. The clean breaks seem hard to come by. I don't want her moving to my town because I don't want to see her all the time. I deny myself that notion, but it's true and real. Seeing her in the flesh breaks my heart all over again every single time. But seeing my kids reconstructs the ruins. Back and forth, town to town, sad to happy, happy to sad. It's wearing me out and I didn't even know it. She's still talking, selling me a thing I've already bought. I'm not going to interfere in your life, dude. I don't want to be involved in your personal stuff. I just want our kids to be close to us all the time, no matter what. Charlie dumps the entire metal bucket of Lincoln Logs all over the rug. The sound is a shattering blast. I smile at him as he looks at me. He's hoping he pissed me off. But oh, Charlie boy, nothing is ever what you expect it to be, my man. Fuck it, I tell myself as the coffee lifts me up and her cheekbones tear me apart and the busted mess on the floor of my late afternoon sun-spackled Target rug that we bought back when we were married before Charlie was even an idea somehow reminds me that none of this is real. Life is but a swift, hard dream. Move here, I say to myself. It'll be for the best. I can handle this. In the name of love or whatever. Just as long as you don't end up moving like right next door or anything. Which is, of course, exactly what eventually happens.
Cowering afraid in the corners of togetherness. Born with a face that life would erase. I chased a frustrated wind to New York. I fell in love with Monique on a Yanks winning streak. And we danced to the popping of chords. I found work in the weeds of a kitchen where the seeds of my dreams I did plant in the sand. Where the tower of plates threw shadows on our fates. And I had too much time.
The early morning mist hits the windshield like rain. It's still dark, so I switch on the headlights and wipers. Rain, Mama, Charlie notes from his Graco throne behind me. Can we get a treat at the gas station? My daughter asks. No, baby, we're in a hurry. Daddy's waiting to take Charlie and Henry to daycare, and we've got to get back in time for you to make the bus. As we cross the intersection near the gas station, our designated kid exchange spot halfway between homes, the kids crane their little necks to see if their dad is already waiting. I spot my ex-husband's familiar blue Honda at the far end of the parking lot. My heart starts to pound. I experience an uncontrollable adrenaline rush every time I see Serge. I never know how these encounters will go. Often they're friendly and eventless. Sometimes they're stilted and awkward, and other times harsh words are exchanged. But that's not the only reason my heart pounds. I miss him. I do. Just because I'm the one who chose divorce doesn't mean I wanted it. I look forward to seeing him sometimes. A lot of times. Other times, it's a relief to be able to drive away. Divorce is confusing. I ease my minivan into the spot next to his car and, amid clipped, formal exchanges, we shuffle our children from one car to the other. No eye contact. You bring Henry's blankie? Yeah. Henry had a bath, but Violet needs her hair washed. You bring jackets for the boys? Here. Violet needs new shoes. I know. Ugh, I hated it. Even though it's two heartbroken, exhausted parents exchanging custody of their beloved children in the only location convenient to both, something about parking at a busy, dirty gas station makes it feel like some kind of illegal covert operation is going down. Bro, you got the kids? Got them right here. Okay, man, let's do this. Conducting the delicate duty of a divorced couple trading parenting shifts as people pump gas, gulp soda, and shovel junk food into mouths feels wrong. But I don't know what to do about that. The gas station shuffle cut what would have been an hour commute in half, so we stuck with it for the first 2 years of our divorce. It worked pretty well when the kids weren't in school, but when our daughter started kindergarten, it became a logistical nightmare on par with solving a Rubik's Cube, something I still haven't managed. 30 minutes apart isn't that far, but it's a lot of car time for three small children who didn't ask for a divorce and have been through enough. Ultimately, instead of the beautiful home in town in the fantastic school district I thought I was giving them as some kind of divorce consolation prize, I began envisioning an existence filled with division. One life in mom's town with one set of friends, and a separate life in dad's town with another set of friends, and a 30-minute road trip in between. Not acceptable. I couldn't do that to my kids. I need them to be minutes from their dad. I need to be minutes from them when they're with him. In the same neighborhood, with a fluid custody schedule. Close enough that in a few years, Henry can tell me he wants to go watch a movie at dad's house and be home in time for bed, and maybe even walk there himself. Serge buckles Charlie into his car seat, climbs in his car without glancing in my direction, and shifts into reverse. I paste a smile on my face and wave as my throat swells. New Order rides the air in their wake for a split second, a few notes escaping open windows, and then they're gone. I sigh, turn my key in the ignition, and pull away from the gas station chaos. Back home, I get out of the car and stand in my driveway as October sunrise slowly bathes the neighborhood in shades of orange. I think of the moment I last saw Charlie's blonde head peeping out the back window. I briefly allow myself to wonder what he's thinking as he's whisked to his dad's town. Two-year-old thoughts, a kaleidoscope of innocent images and feelings not yet shaped or tainted by anything other than his own perfectly pure brain. Mama happily waving goodbye, and Mama inspires feelings of comfort and safety and love, and now he's with Daddy who inspires the same, and this is all he's ever known. More happy mom smiling as I usher my daughter onto the school bus and wave until it rounds the corner. Dad will pick her up after school, and they'll all spend the next two nights at his place. Inside the first house I've lived in alone in 10 years, every previously disregarded routine sign of child life now takes on deep sentimental significance. The spiky drawing of Godzilla my daughter left on the kitchen table is not just a few crayon scribbles, but a masterpiece clearly indicative of a special mind. The Spider-Man costume my son stepped out of and left in a heap on the floor, as if he simply evaporated from within its cloth confines, is now worthy of emotional contemplation, like staring at a sculpture in a museum, and not the annoyance it would have been if he were still here creating another damn mess to clean. Violet was here. Henry was here. Charlie was here. A plastic toy fire engine spins on my record player. A scene that a mere hour ago would have prompted scary mom face, angry voice, and stern finger points. Now the sight of that little red truck on an endless journey around my turntable seems to take on all the meaning in the world, and I become hypnotized by its fireless trek. A fire truck with no fire to put out. A mom without kids. That first hour after they're gone is a jangly, awkward adjustment that has never improved with time. My mind wanders, I wander, unsure what to do with myself. Guarding the lives of three small human beings is an intense, consuming, emotionally exhausting, and extremely physical existence. And when it's gone, your mind and body continue in that elevated state of being. Your mind circles and circles. A stuck record player that wants to play, searching for something that can absorb all that energy. But there's nothing. Like finishing a marathon, you have to walk it off. Let the adrenaline dissipate and try to channel the intensity of parenthood into something different. This unnatural childless state of being is a strange, clumsy existence to navigate in an otherwise chaotic, child-filled life. I could take a long shower now before I head into work. A shower without anyone opening the bathroom door and letting in all the cold air before whipping open the curtain to point at and label my naked body parts. But it's not the same. A luxurious shower stolen in the triumphant moments after I've put them all to bed at night is far lovelier than a shower that can last forever because nobody needs you.
This is your home. You have two homes.
Come on in, Charlie. Maybe we could look at your Halloween costume.
Ooh, Incredible Hulk.
Maybe if you say you'll get a bath for me, then we'll try it on.
No.
Yeah. I like looking in your ears to see if they're clean or dirty. I can't help it.
So at the end of every episode, because Monica and I are both culture vultures in our 40s, we just kind of wanted to share some stuff we dig. Always like it when other people do that. Looking
culture
for
vulture. I like it. This is the culture vulture portion of the podcast.
There you go. I dig that.
Culture vulture.
So
what
maybe
you got?
Just like something, you know, a book or a show or... could be anything that we dig that maybe is just somehow loosely connected to divorce or marriage or love or kids, which essentially can include everything that's ever existed. So can I kick it off?
Go for it. Okay. Let's hear what you got.
All right. Well, mine is up front. It seems like an obvious, almost cliche in a way, but it's the novel Moby Dick by Herman Melville. And the reason that I'm, like, kicking off my culture vulture...
with a little known book nobody's ever heard of.
Right. isn't so much because of the novel itself, which is great, but it's more because I have found in reading it, and I turned to reading it because I just read this other book called In the Heart of the Sea by Nathaniel Philbrook. He's a great historian. But that led me to read Moby Dick. And Moby Dick, I'm finding, is a real challenge for me. And I'm somebody who's read a lot of, you know, quote-unquote literature in my life. And what that has caused me to realize is that I'm getting older. And I think my brain is starting to become more of like a nub than the spear, the sharp spear I once thought of it as. And yet I'm not giving up. I feel like me sticking with this book, which is challenging in a lot of ways... is worth it, and I would just submit to other people who may be feeling the same way. I'm almost 46 years old. Stick with it. Don't give up on your mind. You know, don't let yourself rot.
Well, here's something I found, particularly with classics. Before I jump into my culture vulture item, is that something that you might have tried to read 4 or 5 years ago and put down because it just wasn't working for you, you can come back to it after a few years of living life, and it's suddenly speaking to you in ways that weren't possible then.
Right.
And so it's not necessarily keeping your brain sharp, but as you age, you grow and learn and change, and you become open to stuff that you might have written off before.
Yeah, no.
So if Herman Melville bummed you out before, give it another try.
Right. Well, he never bummed me out. I didn't really read him before, but... I used to read Shakespeare when I was in my 20s for fun, you know, and that's not, I'm not saying that to sound nerdy or cool or anything.
You don't sound
But now
cool.
I honestly think Shakespeare would knock me on my ass, on my intellectual ass, and I don't know if I can do it. I don't want to give up on that notion.
No,
that I can
but
maybe...
it's an acquired taste. Check back in with Shakespeare when you're 55, maybe. Okay, so mine, to transition from Serge's very literary vibe, is basically Hulu. a particular item on Hulu. So I don't know how many people love Louis C.K. or are familiar with his original show, Lucky Louie, and then his show, Louis C.K. on FX. But the woman who played his wife on Lucky Louie and then also stars in Louis C.K. and also co-wrote Louis C.K., by the way, her name is Pamela Adlon, and she's amazing. She's brilliant. I love her. And she now has her own show called Better Things. And it is the best depiction of parenthood or being a single mom that I have ever seen. depicted on television, hands down. And it's in that brilliant vein of Louis and Louis C.K.'s kind of work. So if you can get your kids to bed and have a spare minute, I urge you to either check out on FX, Better Things, or find it on Hulu. Better Things, starring Pamela Adlon. You won't be disappointed.
I gotta watch that.
It's so good.
We're not getting paid by any of these people.
No.
We should tell people.
No, right? We're not getting paid by anyone.
Are you gonna read Moby Dick if I'm gonna watch that? You're not gonna.
Eventually.
That's bullshit.
I will, dude. I have like stacks of books. I don't have time for Moby Dick right now.
You're a fucking dork.
You're a dork. Shakespeare reading when you're 20. You're not being very nice to me.
I promise you. I promise you.
You want to be nice to me? Were the muffins good?
Yeah, they were amazing.